Kia ora, welcome to Playmakers Rugby Stories, where each week we catch up with former and present players about their careers, their life in rugby, some great stories on and off the park. This week, it's former Hurricanes fullback Andre Taylor. Now, cast your mind back 10 years, and Andre was probably the most exciting new talent in Super Rugby. In 2012, scored 10 tries to top the competition and was the talk of the town. These days, he's back home in Palmerston North, having returned from finishing his career in Japan. Although, Andre, it seems like you're still playing a little bit of footy, mate.
Yeah, obviously I came back from Japan and then signed on with the Turbos and then got into a bit of coaching and then now back playing. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
So playing, you're playing club footy for Old Boys in Palmy.
Yeah, College Old Boys in Palmerston North. Halfway during the year, and I was coaching at the start of the year, but then decided I wanted to get back in playing, so I went back to College Old Boys, my bread and butter club, and yeah, trucking on well.
You just missed it too much. You wanted the ball in your hands. You didn't want to tell people what to do. You just wanted to do it.
It's quite frustrating when you're trying to tell somebody what to do and they're not doing it, so I thought I'd better get out there and show them how it's done.
Yeah, you were a player coach, right, over at another club in Fielding at the Yellows. How do you balance that? How do you be a player and a coach at the same time? That must be a pretty difficult gig.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to play and coach last year with Fielding, an awesome club. But it was pretty difficult because obviously you want to play well and you want to do everything right, but you've also got to make sure that you're telling the other boys what to do as well. So I was lucky enough to be an assistant coach, so we sort of had a head coach that could have coached properly, so it made my job a little bit easier.
So where you are now with playing your footy, is it you're happy to be playing at club level, or are you thinking that you're putting on the white and green again this year for Manawatū?
Well, I haven't really thought that far ahead, but obviously I've just got to get back into playing some code and just enjoying myself, and then whatever opportunities come, they come. I'm easy, I'm happy just to play club, but if it goes further, then, you know, I'm willing to step in. You know, if Liam Mason can do it, I'm pretty sure I can.
That means you've probably got another 4 years, haven't you?
Oh, mate, you never know. Age is just a number.
But it's the forwards, isn't it? It's Liam Messam and Brad Thorne, Jerome Cater. These are the guys who are playing into their 40s. You backs have got to keep up when you get up to 33.
Well, that's the thing, you know. Forwards don't have to run as fast. So, you know, their legs and hamstrings and all that can stay attached, whereas us outside backs get to an old age and, you know, we're expected to sprint up, repeat speed after each other. So it's like, you know, just takes one for the team for the injury. So,
well, you said that Japan really suited you. Was it the footy that suited you, your style of game, the attacking style of game?
Yeah. Obviously, if you know, people are lucky enough now to be able to watch it on Sky Sport. And if you do watch it, it's very fast flowing. It's very offloading type game. And it suited me to a T, you know. As a player, I love to counterattack. So there was heaps of room over there, and the coaches that I had over there were awesome. They just allowed me to do whatever suited me. So it made it so much easier for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How easy it was for you, obviously, with language barriers and those kind of things, to play a position where communication is really, really relevant.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously the language was the hardest part. But then when you go into teams that have, like, say, English-based players that have been there for ages, they learn how to speak the language so they can sort of help you out on the field. I sort of learned the language by just talking to the Japanese boys off the field. The terminology on the field was pretty simple, pretty basic calls, obviously, to suit everyone. And, yeah, it was very interesting, but, you know, got there in the end and got through it, so that was pretty good.
Some amazing outside backs over there. I'm thinking Kenji Fukuoka, Matsushima guys, Japanese guys who are just, and we saw it at the World Cup, impossible to tackle it sometimes. Was it a good challenge taking on those kind of guys?
Yeah, they're just real real elusive. You don't know what they're going to do. But, you know, to play against the top experienced guys in Japan was awesome. You know, it's just like playing the best here in New Zealand. You know, there was a few times I got burnt. I'm not going to lie about that. We all burnt at some point in our lives. So, yeah, I'll be honest.
Yeah, now at 33, are you getting burnt at Old Boys, or you're fine?
No, I've had to sort of adjust, and I start positioning myself a lot better and trying to be one play ahead of the first five so that I don't have to do too much running.
Fair enough. Now, you were telling me the other day that you guys play on a Thursday night. Why do you play your club footy down there on a Thursday night?
Well, the only reason we played on Thursday night was because of, obviously, duck shooting this weekend. So it was just a one-off thing, and the teams, both teams that played have a lot of farmers and things like that. So obviously, if we didn't hold it on a Thursday night, then most of the game probably would have got cancelled on Saturday, and we didn't want that. So we agreed to play on a Thursday night so that everyone could go duck shoot.
So how does that work? The captain calls the other captain and goes, "Hey, mate, look, we've seen a few ducks around, and you know, we really should get out on the Mai Mai."
Well, yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much how it works. You know, there used to be another team that used to do it, and they used to have to try and work it so that that team would get the bye that week.
Is there a feat coming up for you?
Well, I hope so. We're training on Tuesday, so.
So what you're saying is you weren't there duck shooting?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't. I was spending a lot of family time, you know, doing the right thing. But I'll get out for a duck shoot at some point. It's just a matter of time.
Family time. Does that include shooting golf as well? Is that family time on the weekend?
Yes, golf is part of family time, but that's when my boy goes to bed. This is midday sleep. So I'll go out, play, and then I get home just as he wakes up. So
can you fit 18 holes into a midday nap?
That's because we play with carts. So it's lazy golf.
We played a game in Wellington 10 years ago, and I was thinking about that when we were preparing for this, and my memory of your golf game is that you play with a massive hook almost, like you're well out to the left, slice, and you go well out left over the trees and bring it back in. And in that same game, TJ Pettinato was playing, and he plays with a huge draw over from the right tees and coming back into the middle. And I was just thinking about this is two very different ways of approaching the game.
We've all got our ways, mate. You know, it's not always like that. Some days you can be stuck straight. Some days you can hit a draw. It's all about making sure that you're consistent. But, you know, TJ was one of those guys who was very competitive, as always, as you can tell on the field. So he was always out there to try and win. And now there were some good golf battles going on within the Hurricanes on our days off. So
how competitive is it? Did you get a few off TJ, or, you know, in the most part, who was winning those games?
When Bodie wasn't there, we had a chance, but when Bodie was there, it was pretty much him every week. But me and TJ, we went backwards and forwards every now and then. So we made it quite fun, if you know what I mean.
He's competitive, eh? Is there no broken clubs or anything like that when you've taken him down?
Nah, no broken clubs. The only guy I know of is Ben May, who threw a pitching wedge up into a tree and apparently it never got found. So he had to replace that pitching wedge. Just hit a shot, must have been bad, and just threw his club.
It's gone, and he couldn't climb it.
Well, no, they tried to look for it, but they couldn't find it. So Ben May had to replace the club.
You came into first class footy at really young age. You were 18 years old. You know, were you still at high school?
Yeah, I was still at Palmy Boys when I made my debut with those. So very lucky and very honoured.
And so it was Dave Rennie brought you in. I think it was the first year of the Air New Zealand Cup, 2006. What was it like to be pulled in by a guy like Dave Rennie, who's been such a great mentor to so many young players coming up? What kind of words of advice did he give you?
He just said, you know, do what you do. You play the game for how you want to play it, and you just look like you're out there having fun. So do the same for us, really. And then on top of that, he just sort of tried to guide me. You know, he didn't try and change me completely. He just tried to guide me into the right player that I needed to be. So it was a good coach to have to pursue my career. And I've always thanked him for that opportunity.
You're not the biggest rugby player out, and four games in, there's this bloke on the other side of you called Jonah Lomu. Yeah, admittedly, it was towards the end of Jonah's career and he's making that comeback in North Harbour. But as an 18-year-old kid walking out onto the field to see arguably the biggest and best left wing that ever walked the planet. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, there was a big build up about it that week. And I'm not going to lie, I was nervous. Jonah was a legend and still was a legend of the game. And to have the opportunity was just something that any kid at school would dream of. You know, I remember the first time he touched the ball and then he tried to in and out me. And all I did was just say, grab something. you know, I tried to grab one, both his legs. My arms were only big enough to grab one because that's how big his body was, you know. The second time, I remember we had a 5-meter scrum and he had a 15-meter blindside. And I'm sitting there going, well, 5-meter scrum, 15-meter blindside, 120 kilos or whatever he was. Into my 76. I'm looking at my loose forward going, which was Nick Croswell at the time, going, hey, you better help me out, you know. And then next minute, the ball goes in, ball goes to him. I know it's coming, so I run up, close my eyes, and next minute we're in touch. And I don't know what happened. I just closed my eyes and just hope for God.
And he was there.
All that was going through my mind was Michael Catt getting run over at the for England. Don't be that doormat. At the end of the day, you know, I got to go one-on-one, and it was a great battle, so really enjoyed that moment.
Awesome. And it wasn't long before you were in the Hurricanes setup. A couple of years later, you were kind of in the wider training squad, and then, you know, next thing you know, you 2010, I think it was, a Hurricane. You come into that setup, and obviously players get mentors, people to look after them, and your bloke is Corey Jane. a guy renowned as a larrikin. You know, any funny stories there? How did he look after you?
It was just one game. Like, I did something wrong, and he was at fullback, and I was on the wing, and I did something wrong, and he come in and ripped my ear apart, just blew me to pieces. Why did you do that? Blah blah blah. And it made me learn, you know. And then next minute, I'm like, well, he's the best fullback in the world. Why not listen to him and take his advice? So I sort of jumped under his wing, and yeah, no, he sort of just jumped on board and pretty much taught me everything I needed to know to make me the player that I was. And when I finished playing, so.
And you had to room with him a little bit.
Yeah, we sort of roomed together pretty much every time. Obviously, for one, I used to have to get the treats. So whatever he wanted, I had to go to the shop and go get it and bring it back. And two, we sort of had the same routine. So we always had a midday sleep when it was, you know, a 7:30 game. And when you got somebody who has the same routine, it makes your game prep so much easier.
Yeah, and apparently he says you don't snore, which makes you the perfect companion, because otherwise you'd lose that midday sleep.
Well, yeah, obviously I don't snore, but then I've had to say that I do, so it must have been just the lucky timing. Must be old age.
What about the other way? Was his snoring keeping you up during that midday sleep?
Oh, nah, he was pretty good, eh? He was pretty, when he was asleep, he was out to it. You wouldn't hear a bar of him.
So what's he getting from the shop? What lollies is he getting you to get?
Chocolate. Got to have a chocolate. There's got to be a chocolate in there and a fizzy. There's always got to be a fizzy.
It was an interesting time to be a Hurricane, because in 2011, Mark Hammett came in and he cleaned house, didn't he? And he looked to overhaul the team, and some guys like Pity and Ma'a, guys who had been kind of part of that Hurricane setup for so long, went off to the Blues. And it kind of set up the new beginning where TJ and Bowden were running the show. And it was a complete overhaul. As a young player in that environment, how easy was it to get through that period where the guys who, you know, you'd look up to and now played with were going, and there was this new thing starting? Was that a tough period?
Yeah, you know, obviously those types of guys like Pity and Ma were part of the Hurricanes family for so long. And then for them just to disappear, not disappear, but sort of leave and join a franchise was quite difficult to take. But at the end of the day, we're all professional athletes and we've got to move on some way. So whether it was Bodie running the show or TJ or young guys coming in, you just had to accept it, really, and move on. Otherwise, you weren't going to perform that well. And you still had, like, a lot of old heads like Conrad Smith, obviously Corey Jane, and a few of the, like, Jeremy Thrush and all that, and then forwards too. So there was still a lot of experience around. But, yeah, you know, you just got to move on and get on with it.
And come 2012, it was the big year that I remember in your career as a Hurricane. You had an absolute cracker, and the team was starting to get going. What do you remember about 2012? And you scored 10 tries. You were the top in Super Rugby. You were counter-attacking like an absolute genius. You were beating people on the outside. Things were happening. What led to that point where you guys are in such a good place and you were playing that footy?
I think it was just getting told to play how I like playing footy. I was always a runner of the ball, always looked to run first and then kick second. And then having the confidence around me, you know, Jules was coming into form as well. Corey was on the other wing who sort of made everything so much easier for me with the positional players we talked about earlier. And then obviously when you got the backing of your coaches, that helps, you know, dramatically. So when the confidence is high, you can just start rolling and start enjoying what you do.
Yeah, I remember one game in particular. I think it was the game against Auckland, which is the game we're going to play after this. You guys won 26-25. It was last minute. There was a try. It was a big, big win. Do you remember all those games, those little details of what happens in those particular games, especially big wins like that?
Yeah, I remember that exact game. You know, I think Bowden Barrett had a bit of a dummy and then found a gap and then offloaded to Snakey who scored, and then Bodie kicked the penalty, kicked the conversion to win the game. And we were behind most of that game. And the boys just dug deep and, you know, ended up coming away with the win. But, you know, it's little moments like that in games that you remember forever. And it's not always the big ones. So no, that was a very good game, that one, and it was good to walk away with the win.
Yeah, 100%. And most of the time after you finished your tries, in particular that season, there was a try celebration. Tell me about how you ended up doing the Dougie as your try celebration. What was going on there?
Just the heat of the moment. You know, Jules had done it. TJ had done it. And you know, when you're, the adrenaline's rushing, you know, it's just one of those things. It just happens. And obviously it just happened at that time. I'd scored, I don't know, two or three tries in that game, and that was the last one, I think. And, yeah, just got up and why not?
Are you practicing in front of the mirror at home during the week to make sure you nail this? Because you don't want to do that and stuff it up. You're going to look like an idiot.
No, well, you know, in the changing rooms during training and that, Jules would be having a bit of a dance session and whatnot, and CJ would get involved, and TJ, and that was our little crew. And you know, you sort of get up and have a bit of a boogie and have a bit of a laugh, but you know, I'm not as good as TJ and Jules, that's for sure.
You had a really good couple of years at the Canes there, and then you decided it was time to head off to Japan. Why did you end up moving on? Because there was a lot of chatter about you for a couple of years that you were right on the verge of that black jersey.
That was something that came into my mind, was the black jersey. You know, obviously in 2012 I had a great year, and it was probably some of the best rugby I've ever played in my life. And to not make it was quite disheartening. But you know, as every rugby player grows up and want to be an All Black, not everyone can be. So I made a decision to, you know, how long do I chase the black jersey, or how long do I go over and try something different. So obviously I ended up going over to Japan, and yeah, it just flowed from there, and now I'm back home and loving life. So didn't achieve what I wanted to in life, but not everyone's going to be an All Black. So it's just one of those things you've got to take on the chin. So
you're philosophical now, but at the time when you went to Japan, were you able to be this philosophical like you are now?
Yeah. Like, you just got to take things on the chin. You know, it's the same thing in Japan. I was in the development team for the Japan international side. A couple of injuries, and you know, you miss out. So those are the things you just got to take on the chin, and that's just part of rugby. you can either bounce back harder or you just go the other direction and not try as hard. But I still walk around with a smile on my face, and now all I'm trying to do is help out others.
Let's talk about that. What are you doing? What is your career right now as far as helping out others?
So at the moment I'm working at my local school that I went to, which is actually a school in Palmerston North, as a sports coach out there. I teach kids how to catch, throw, run, balance, teach them how to use teamwork, and then I train them to play against other schools around the community and around Palmerston North. So very awesome job, love it. The kids love it, and I'm just trying to get kids more involved in sport and try and get them off technology. It's a hard task, but you know, you've got to start somewhere.
How do you go about doing it?
Well, I sit down with the principal first, and we sort of talk about how we want to, what we want to achieve for the year. And then at the end of the day, you just got to try and get games that suit kids. And you've got to split kids up into different groups, like the more advanced kids, put them all together so that they can play. The lower kids, you know, pull them aside, put them all in one group so that they're confident in playing with each other. Because obviously if you've got like a real experienced kid with a non-experienced, that non-experienced kid's not going to enjoy it. So it's making sure that you get the balance of the right players and the right teams and whatnot.
So you've got to balance participation and enjoyment with then also taking the people who want to be more elite and give them the skill set as well. So you've got kind of multiple reasons for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I've got a big job to do there at the school. So I'm trying to help out all sorts of kids, whether it's their first year, whether it's kids that don't even like sport, you know, just trying to encourage them to try something to get them out running or even just to touch a ball. I had a kid last year who didn't even want to touch a ball, and by the end of the year I had them playing with ball. So you know, it's just those things, those types of kids that you've got to keep working with, and you've just got to have patience. You know, you can't go in too hard, you can't go in too soft, you just got to make sure you have a good tone and voice of how you speak to them and things like that.
How did this project come to be? How did you become involved in this?
Yeah, so obviously my last year with the Turbos, when I got back from Japan, I got asked to head out to Ashu School and just do some Ripper Rugby stuff with some of the kids at lunchtimes on my days off. And they were happy with the job I did there. And yeah, they just approached me to see if I wanted to take it further. And obviously I accepted the role, and now we're sort of working really hard to try and achieve some goals going forward.
And this is a school that you went to as a kid too, so there's quite a cool connection.
Yeah, you know, it was something that I never even thought would happen, going back to where I grew up and giving back to where I was, you know. But now I love it. The kids there are awesome. They've got a lot of respect for me, and, you know, I'm getting a lot of respect for them. So it's an awesome school, great school, and I think another couple of years I'm pretty sure that school will be competitive in some major inter-school competitions going forward.
So your role, is that the kind of role you think that should be spread across all schools?
Oh, I think it's awesome. I do really think that other schools should push for something similar. I just think it's beneficial for the kids. Obviously, you know, you've got your classes and trying to find time in your day to try and get out to sport. But, you know, kids need sport. Kids need to be running around. They need to be doing those types of things, because that's, you know, as a kid, I grew up climbing trees at school and things like that. And these days you don't see that. So sport is something that I think needs to be looked at primary school and intermediate. When I first got there, I had kids that couldn't even throw a ball. You know what I mean? So what are we doing at home to try and help this and things like that? So that's what goes through my mind, is what's going on at home. Are the parents spending time with their kids? Do kids have the right equipment at home to even get into throwing a ball? So those are things that I'm looking at, and I think we need to look at as a nation.
In the meantime, you can teach your little fella to play some golf as well.
Oh, mate, tell me about it. He's outside hitting golf balls about an hour every night. I had to go buy him the plastic ones because he was getting so good with the hard balls, he was nearly breaking windows. The funny thing is that I went out there the other night and he's in the garden. And I'm like, what are you doing, son? And he's like, I'm practice hitting out of the bunker. So he's turned my garden into a bunker, which is not good for the garden, but as long as he's swinging a club, I don't mind.
Thank you very much, Andre Taylor, for joining us on Playmakers Rugby Stories. Join us again every Wednesday where we bring back a former player, sometimes present players. We talk about their careers and also have a look at one of their greatest games, like the one coming up now, the Blues versus the Hurricanes. Andre Taylor, catch us next week here on Sky Sport.